one of those things that I always tell people to watch out for is like when you first buy a product, a lot of these things will just kind of be set up to automatically send your information everywhere. Just be conscious of where your information is going, or try to be. It's a hard ask to tell people to do. But I think that these aren't impossible things. You're never going to get really perfect privacy, but the whole goal is to limit your exposure to a lot of it. And then also just putting safe practices in for your kids and things like that, and trying to kind of like limit this.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by The Juice. Our mission is to squeeze out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals to help you push your brand to the forefront of the industry. Let's raise the glass. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Content Cocktail Hour. Thanks for joining us today. I am thrilled to be joined by Luke from Brave, who is VP of Business Operations. I'm really excited to dig into this conversation. I think part of the job of being a host of a podcast is getting people on who are way smarter than you and getting out of the way. And I think I've accomplished that today. Luke, so thank you for joining us. Why don't you give us a little bit of your background and a little bit about Brave before we jump into the meat of the conversation?
Yeah, first, thanks for having me on. I'm not sure if I qualify as smarter than anybody, but I appreciate the vote of confidence early on. I'm a VP of Business Operations at Brave. I started working at Brave back in March of 2016. Started working with a team because I really saw, you know, the promise of what they were trying to do, and it was a very unique thing for the market. And from my background, I was in the director of ad products at a company called OEO, and I did startups prior to that. But I was really in the sausage making belly of the beast of advertising tech, and in a unique position too, between some of the biggest media companies and also like the platform. So we saw how Google scaled and how Facebook grew and all these things, but also how the deal flow worked and how the products worked and all of that. And it was something where people don't realize the degree to which the privacy has been kind of like put out there. And nobody was really looking at it the way that Brave was. Everyone was trying to kind of say, okay, well, ad blockers are a growing thing, but like, how do we get around that and still show somebody an ad? And that was kind of like a different approach, but one that I didn't really think would be a winning one. And what Brave said was like, let's try to figure out how to make businesses work with a model where users are kind of put first and they're privacy is protected and all that stuff. And that part seemed very interesting to me. So that's kind of what got me here.
That's awesome. And so I know there's several different kind of pieces of Brave, and you just hit on several different pieces of those, but maybe for the uninitiated, for those listening at a high level, what does Brave do?
So Brave started as a privacy focused browser. And so just like how you have Chrome or Firefox or Edge or Safari, right? Where Brave was different, it was Brave basically built in really strong privacy protections by default. So we blocked all third-party advertising and tracking in the browser and basically said, look, if we want to create new models that are going to protect users' privacy and allow for businesses, et cetera, you've really got to start from zero and make it so that those practices that are compromising user privacy are dealt with as a first principle. And so that's what we did. So like initially just going to market, it's like, look, like you've got a great browser that has a built-in ad blocker. And really, I mean, even now it's one of those things where it's like, look, if you want to watch YouTube without ads and have background playback, you can do that on Brave for free on desktop and mobile, which is kind of a cool way to hook people in. But really it started there, right? It started with the browser, because the browser is really, it is the user agent, even from a technical perspective. That's how it's referred to. But also, like, it grew from there too. We bought a search engine several years ago from a company that had come up with a really novel way of making a search index from a browser in Europe. And so we did that. It's a privacy search engine, like similar privacy or even better privacy than what DuckDuckGo has, except it's our own search index too. So like, whereas like DuckDuckGo is like built on Bing and kind of relies on their index, we actually have our own. And that's really a different thing here because you have Bing and Google, and that's basically it as far as independent indexes go. And then everybody else uses those indexes. So we're able to bring a new option to market that's private by default, but also it gives you a different bit of independence too if you're a company looking to do things with a search engine or an index, right? And so really, it solved a puzzle for us, because one of those things, I had never worked for a browser before I came to Brave. And it was one of those things where people really confuse search engines and browsers like all the time. Like, you know, you're like, okay, I use DuckDuckGo. Well, yeah, they kind of have a browser now and a search engine, but like you're using it. Okay, got it. So having both of those things really tied the pieces together and made it so that we have this kind of full package. And we built other products on top of this too. So we have like a VPN and a Zoom competitor called Brave Talk, where it has like end-to-end encryption options and privacy. And it's basically like all these different ways where like we have a product stack where it puts the user's priorities first. And there's this like principal agent problem that it becomes inevitable in a lot of places. You see it in politics, you see it in other, but in the tech world, it's one of those things where if Google is making all their money from advertising and that advertising compromises users' privacy, you start to see product decisions where they put the user's privacy at risk, even though the browser is supposed to be the user agent, right? So Brave is trying to take a different approach. And it was one where you almost have to have a startup do it, because the way that the advertising industry and tech had grown, these things grow exponentially, right? And it isn't always malicious or nefarious, but it's just the way it is. And for Google to do something like this is a lot harder, which is what we've seen as they've tried to build in more private ways of doing advertising. They still have to go from work backwards almost and find something that fits with the landscape that they helped to grow. Whereas Brave can be like, no, we're just going to make new tools and show people how this can be done and then build a viable business off of that. So for us, it's about having software that puts people first, and then people will move with their feet to it. And we've seen that happen over the years. And I think we're over 74 million monthly active users now globally and 28 million daily active users. And so, you know, those are all people that kind of have shown, hey, there's some benefit here to either the model or the principles or just the usability of the thing that makes it something we want to go work with.
Yeah. It was a big problem that you all took on. I think you're exactly right. And you've done it successfully. Kudos to you all. I am happy to be one of the 74 million users. So I would recommend it. If you haven't checked it out already, I'd recommend it to our listeners for sure. All right, Luke, before we dig in more, this is the Content Cocktail Hour. We always like asking our guests, what are they enjoying drinking nowadays?
Yeah, no, I drink what is it? It's yerba mate, like is like my go-to daytime drink. But then I kind of got wrapped into this whole meme coin frenzy this year, where I found myself embedding with this company, or not a company, but it's a community called Maotai. It's like a Chinese liquor, kind of like a Hennessy or champagne or something, where it's grown in, or it's brewed in a certain, distilled in a certain region in China to qualify as what it is. I had no idea what it was, but I guess it's like one of these huge drinks over there. And I kind of went all in on it. And yeah, so I've been drinking that a little bit lately, which is not something I had on my bingo card for 2024, but life's an adventure, you know.
Fascinating. That's the first bingo space we've had of that liquor on this podcast. So kudos to everyone holding on to that ticket. Impressive. I've got some research to do. I'd be really fascinated. You know, a lot of our listeners are marketers, and I feel like there's this huge paradox just happening in marketing advertising right now, where the people being advertised to are really responsive to really custom, really unique advertisements. And that's what they want. That's better than non-relevant advertising, but they also want privacy. And then on the other side, marketers, the technology to build and create custom advertisements and the data available to marketers has never been more powerful. But we as marketers, I think a lot of times are toeing the line between creepy and cool, right? How do you suggest people, you know, using Brave, but even like beyond that, like how do you even like unwind that kind of philosophical debate of privacy versus personalization?
A lot of what has gotten people tied in knots about this has been the fact that like, in order for the way that advertising traditionally works on the web, you have to collect a lot of user data, and it's collected across a lot of different parties, right? So you go to a site, and when GDPR came out in 2018, it was a great example of, I don't think people realize, and most probably still don't, if you go to some of these sites where they have these consent dialogues that pop up and it'll show you like all the different companies, you have all these different interests that they sync the data in some cases, but like, it's all this data that's collected, right, to give you this relevancy. But when a marketer's looking at this, they're, one, taking a gamble that the ads are actually being effectively targeted to this data. And then, two, the individual user isn't really the person that the marketer cares about. They care about, am I getting the ROI on what I'm doing on the output, right? For every dollar I put in, what do I get out? And you can even see this in how they look at the data. They don't look at how Joe Schmo bought something. They look at how like 18 to 25 year old males in California bought something, which is, you can do things that are efficient and effective with targeting that do not require the data to be collected in order to land on front of that likely user. It's just that the technology that it scaled wasn't built to do that, right? And so that's one of those things where with what we're trying to prove is that, look, the browser knows what the user is doing locally. If you, a great example, way to put your head around this is like, think that everybody has a browser, right? But like your browser history in your browser is unique to you and to your device, right? So what we've done is we said, okay, if we wanted to make a model that could actually work with privacy, let's, instead of having all these different companies out there in the cloud collect all of your data and then determine at that point if you're still worth bidding on, let's actually move all the targeting and the matching directly to the browser, because the browser knows what the user is doing. And so as long as we know what ads are available and how those are classified to serve, we can download those to the browser. The browser can actually have a model for targeting on it that works from that. Now you've removed that need to have all those third parties that are doing all this, because you actually have a complete view of what the user is doing. And that's all that these third party companies are doing, is they're all trying to build a different version of you that's marketable. Well, if we just said, okay, look, like, just change the way you're doing it. Like, just do this on the browser, almost like an autonomous car, right? Like your car will take you where you need to go. Everybody has different locations that they're trying to go to, or it might be different temperature inside the car. It doesn't matter. The car will do the job, right? The browser will do the job. And so we have come up with a way where we can, whether it's based on what you're browsing or like different intent signals. So like, let's say that your certain keywords are popping up from the URL bar, or there's certain websites that you're visiting in a certain order. We can make audience segments based off of that, that we can then target the ads to. And so we've just figured out a different way of doing this from the browser that nobody had really done this way before. And so there's that side of it. And the other side of it is also with search, because if you have users' intent, with that's what search querying is. The user is putting in their intent into the search engine. And so as long as what we're serving up on the ad side for search is as relevant as the search results, then they're getting a really relevant advertisement that they are going to go act on. And so that's kind of like the two things that we're doing, where if we can deliver on both of those, which we've proven to be able to do, while keeping that first user first principle out there of like, keep the user's data private, give the advertiser enough data so that they can improve the ROI, the marketers don't care. Like, as long as they're getting the output to justify to their boss, and as long as you're giving them enough volume to spend with, they'll keep coming back to you. I mean, and it's not just in digital advertising too. I mean, the billboards are a thing. Like, there's a lot of like acronym soup in digital marketing and advertising, right? But a lot of it's also like fan bandwagoning and stuff, where it's like, what's the trend? I want to make sure I'm doing this thing because that's what everybody else is doing. Whether or not it's really effective or efficient is up for debate. I mean, that's one of the things that I saw firsthand when I was, before I came to Brave, was just the margin of error is like, acceptable margin of error is 10-ish%. And then it could be up to 15 or 18 if you had a good reason. And it never really slowed anybody down. People still spend money. And so I think what we're looking at is a way to upgrade the system so that it can be relevant and to prove that out, because it doesn't need to have all this complexity if we can figure out a way to do it that is like, the reporting is like validated in some way, like whether that's with security, with encryption, cryptography, or with different ways of getting to that end result that the marketer wants. And that's one of those things that we've been early on at Brave and we've been really aggressive with, is just kind of like bringing these things to market and then getting them in front of people so that they can opt into it. When we first launched our first ad product in 2019, it was completely opt-in. So like users had to go in, they were in an ad blocking product, and then they had to opt in to seeing ads. And our way of doing it was by like incentivizing them too, saying, look, as a user first company, like we should be able to, users, without the user's attention, there's nothing. There's no relationship in advertising at all. And that's part of the raw deal that's been there for users for a really long time, is that users, without them, there's no money flowing here at all. And people will say, well, it's a free internet, but really, like, that's devaluing the fungible attention value that everybody has. What we did was we said, look, like, we'll make a model too where users' attention, there's a revenue share that goes to the user for their attention. And that's what we did with our first ad product. And we still have that today. Users can opt in to earn from the ads that they view, like with their attention. So we include that kind of an incentive model in there so the users that want to earn can. But also like just building off of those first principles and doing it in a way that keeps brands coming back is like a really key thing for us. And the gamble we took was that like we'll build something and then it'll get, initially it's going to be a lot of conversations with marketers. And that's what it's been. It's been a really rough road about it. Like when we first launched, publishers hated us, and publishers associations hated us. And I don't necessarily blame them. they're in a really tough position too. What we ended up having to refocus on was just like staying with that core with user base. Like users will move with their feet and then it will become a thing that's so big that they can't ignore us, right? That these companies can't ignore us. And so, you know, a lot of lessons in there and hard roads traveling, but if it was easy, someone else would have done it. And our founders, like Brendan Eich, our co-founder, who like created JavaScript and brought like Mozilla Firefox to market, and at a time when Internet Explorer was kind of like how Google Chrome is today, as far as like market share and power goes in the market. And so, you know, he's just one of many visionaries and also just like key web people that we work with here at Brave. It's kind of like the way we've looked at it is like, look, if you had a second chance to go and redo the web in a way that could be better, this is it. This is your second chance. This is also probably the last chance that we have realistically to like draw that line where the user agent meets the user and the web, right? So like, you know, you're running out of area where, you know, you've had complete capture on the user. This is one of those, the water's edge moments where we're either going to build something now for this, or we're just going to really capitulate as users and accept that there's no more privacy. And that's kind of a depressing thing to think about too much, but that's also why we're building stuff. And it's not just us. I mean, like I said before, we started in Brave in 2016. This was a lot of like talk back then, right? Like it was a lot of like, oh, who cares about their privacy? Kids put their stuff on social media all the time or whatever. But like families still have window shades and door locks. And those are kind of the arguments. But I think it's not just us. Like Proton's got over 100 million users on their private thing. DuckDuckGo's gotten really big. Like there's a lot of different private options for things out there. Signal messaging has gotten really large. Like, and now we're at a point where you're almost a minority if you have not been hit by a data breach. There's services that are helping to clean that stuff up for you. So I think that's what's been a big fundamental difference, is like a lot of people on our team were really early to what could happen and what's likely to happen. And now we're seeing the rubber meet the road on things are happening, right? Like where now in the information space is just so different now than it was back then. But luckily we've been building these things and others have too, and it's helped to inspire others. And we've helped to grow other companies that are trying to do these things too.
Yeah. So maybe a good segue, you know, we've got increasing privacy regulations, Web3 emerging, AI emerging, all those are having ripple effects into search. I know you don't have all the answers, but you're probably closer to them than most are. Where is this all going?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think there's a lot of hype around all of it too, which is part of the tricky thing to navigate, is that like you wouldn't have really impassioned people that are really smart working on, in each of these different areas you mentioned, if there weren't fundamental reasons why they were being built in the first place. And so if you look at things like crypto, for example, right, like a Bitcoin white paper emerged in 2009 off the heels of a global financial crisis where you had a lot of people working in fintech that were like, what the hell? Like there's no one being held accountable here. That we have to upgrade the technology. There needs to be a better way of doing this. And I think that history has proven too, that if we had a lot of these technologies back when that financial crisis had happened, you would probably, it might not have avoided it, but it might've caught it a lot earlier, having, you know, a lot more transparency in these systems. So, you know, there's a lot of like casino hype around crypto and Web3. And some of that is just new technology coming to market, right? Like, and you see the same thing with the internet and with the web initially too, where you had like pets.com and this whole like, you know, IPO craze back in the early 2000s. It's a natural part of the cycle. Like speculation fuels a lot of that early development, but it's not gone away. And, you know, we've seen kind of both a conviction and resilience among the crypto space and the Web3 space, to where it's gone from being small enough to potentially get busted up to like now having the most powerful government in the world trying to challenge it, like on a bunch of different levels, and kind of weathering through that storm. And now it's almost like the genie's out of the bottle. You can't really put it back. And it's a global thing like the internet at this point. And now how it will get navigated over time, we'll see. But I think that, you know, it's one of those things where there's no going back at this point. And I think if you look at AI too, and privacy, the evidence starts to speak for itself. I think like AI, you're seeing it be used in ways that are actually like very helpful. And it's a matter of time as AI products come to market that find fit. But I think looking at things even like the NVIDIA stock price, right? Like it's not going away. And it's already, it's not necessarily a new thing either. I mean, AI has been around for a really long time. I think, you know, this hype that's been around, it is pretty new, but some of the things you can do with it are just remarkable, and it'll end up being ubiquitous and out there. And these two things emerging at the same time is really interesting, because one of the things that AI and crypto can kind of converge on is having a proof of it, that someone is actually real and actually like signing a piece of work that they put out in the world, and having a way to validate that and verify it publicly. And there's ways that you can do that with cryptography and with Web3 with AI. And I think that's a natural vector for those two things to be together, is like, you know, you could have something like a proof that proves that I signed the message, that I created the thing, and use that to combat certain things like people posing as other people and other stuff like that, and signing your work and doing all sorts of things like that. I mean, it's political season right now. Like, you know, it's only going to get more weird, but imagine if you could have a candidate signing that they verify that they actually, it's the same way they used to say, oh, I can confirm this message, or I endorse this message, or approve it, or whatever. It's a different way of approving it, right? Like, except with the technology. And I think the way things are moving, we're going to need to have some form of authentication on content that comes out and gets merged with AI. And that's an inevitable thing. But you know, those things will converge in a certain way. And then the other piece is like kind of around what we're doing at Brave, where we're trying to kind of tie all these things together. Having AI built into the browser, and in doing it in a way that's not going to compromise the user's privacy or, you know, their agency, is like really important, because there's a lot of ways that AI can get abused, and there's a lot of ways the users can get abused through AI and things like that. And so what we're trying to do is figure out ways that we can cross this across the whole browser experience, whether that's something simple like summarizing a page or transcribing a video call you're on, to something even more advanced. Like, I want to learn how to use this crypto stuff. Maybe I'll have an AI assistant actually guiding me through this onboarding process or something like that. Lots of different ways, but that's kind of where our heads are at with a lot of this right now.
It's interesting. I want to flip the lens maybe just a little bit briefly, but for a lot of listeners, watchers of this podcast who are, maybe they're not in ads, maybe they're in sales versus marketing, but just all of us as consumers of digital content, like, what recommendation do you have for those of us that do care about privacy? Is it as simple as use Brave, or are there other things they should be thinking about from the consumer side of things as it pertains to privacy and all of the kind of digital evolution right now?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think obviously I'll say use Brave stuff, I think, because we make good stuff. And also we kind of cover a lot of the ground, but you can use things like Proton Mail too, and Signal for communications and things like that will help. And they're getting a lot easier to use too. And I think a lot of these things have been, you know, they were a lot harder to use, but now it's a lot easier to use them. You're seeing that too with just the emergence of, like, while Telegram's not perfect, I mean, like, it's one of those things where it's become part of the zeitgeist. But even things like Facebook, like WhatsApp, et cetera, they're all using different types of, you know, encryption schemes that people weren't really thinking. When I started at Brave, right, back in 2016, the big push was to get everybody to use HTTPS. And it was like a small percentage of the population that were actually using it, or of websites. And that exponentially grew overnight. And now you're seeing a lot of these things that were used to be really quite hard to adopt are becoming much easier to adopt. So I think there's things like that, like using those products is a great way to start. There's a lot of people you could follow too, like on Twitter or X or whatever we're calling it these days. Naomi Rockwell is one of those great people who does a really good job of bite-sizing complicated privacy tools and concepts into, like, you know, understandable videos and product suggestions and informing people on. But those are the things I would say to try and do. And then if there's a way that you can do something without exposing it, I think one of those things that I always tell people to watch out for is, like, when you first buy a product, you know, a lot of these things will just kind of be set up to automatically send your information everywhere. Just be conscious of where your information is going, or try to be. It's a hard ask to tell people to do, but I think that these aren't impossible things. You're never going to get really perfect privacy, but the whole goal is to limit your exposure to a lot of it. And then also just putting safe practices in for your kids and things like that, and trying to kind of, like, limit this. And I mean, is there a reason that your microwave needs to talk to the internet? Probably not. You know, like, those types of things, you know, where it's always this kind of collision between creature comforts and convenience. And every new signal you introduce is putting more of your information up into a place that, you know, or to parties that you might not even be aware of.
I want to advertise to 30-year-olds in California who microwave their popcorn for 30 seconds. That's the future, huh? Thank you so much. This is fascinating. I could talk for hours about this topic, but if people want to learn more about Brave or learn more from you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, so the real easy way is go to brave.com. That's our website. We have a new redesign there too, where we cover all our products there. We have a way you can search through there. Advertisers can go there, and we have our self-serve platform that we launched for advertisers is available right there too. And then if you want to follow me, I'm on Twitter. It's just Luke Mulks on Twitter. I answer DMs and they're open, and yeah, say hi and tell us when you love stuff or when you hate stuff and what we can fix if stuff's broken. That's what we love to hear.
Slide into Luke's DMs. I like that invitation, especially if you have any questions about what was the Chinese liquor?
Oh, Moutai. Moutai. Yeah. Moutai is the ticker. Moutai. It is a great meme coin community. We have a whole lineup of meme coins, actually, like about five of them that we help to grow through Brave at. So we kind of pick, okay, which ones are not going to rug on people and most likely actually doing things that are interesting aside from being just a meme. Yeah, that's one of them.
All right. I'm fascinated. I'm going to be digging into that. Well, Luke, thank you so much for joining us. All of our watchers, all of our listeners, thanks for joining the Content Cocktail Hour. You know where to find us. Until next time, same place. Cheers. Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by The Juice. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us on app.thejuicehq.com. See you next time, same place. Cheers.